Hello everyone, Nexa here, and I'm excited because we're doing our first group panel discussion. And my panel with me today is Buck, Kirby,
Hello.
And Graytom.
Hello everyone.
Kirby, you can say hi too.
I will. Hi everybody. Hello.
So this is Evolving RPG's first attempt at doing a group panel discussion. And since I've introduced all of the panel who've done previous podcasts for Evolving RPG, we're just going to jump right in it. So I'm going to start with Buck first. So he gets the first question. Buck, as a DM, GM, or a player, where do you get your inspiration from?
I would say mostly from things that I've read. My first D&D character was based off of Tanis from the Dragonlance Chronicles novels. Named him Harlequin. I didn't really know what Harlequin meant back then. I just thought the name was pretty cool. So he was pretty much just Tanis. I mean, he looked exactly like him. Chaotic good, you know, fighter, half-elven. And most of my stories are kind of combinations of real world events, things I've read in fiction, and like historic. And I tend to have like a wide range of interests, and I try to combine them all. Like I had a villain in the last game that I ran that was based off of Genghis Khan, and another faction that was kind of based off of ISIS. So I do all kinds of weird things. But I would say mostly, primarily, it's from things that I've read.
And moving right with that, Kirby, where do you get your inspiration from? Is it from things like Buck, where you read, or do you pull from somewhere else?
Well, I have to say that I pull pretty much from everything, per se. I'll see something, and it will, and all of a sudden a story will form just from that. For a small example, one of the stories that I ran was an evil tree that was used to be like a tree of knowledge that was corrupted, and the tree had a eye that was in the very center of it, and it was something that shot laser beams out of it to hurt the players' PCs. Well, that particular tree idea came from, I went to one of my friend's house and they had a tree in front of their house, which the woodworking and the lines in the wood, it looked like an eye in the middle of the tree, and that's kind of where it came from. And that's very similar to what I get my ideas from. I just kind of look at different things and stuff just comes natural, comes forming through. And as I said in my podcast yet to be released, a lot of these things that I get are just from my wild imagination. Same thing with, like I said, with the stone statue being on top of a buried, underneath the ground temple. I mean, I just thought, I looked at a steeple one day, or I looked at a statue actually that's on top of a tower in the middle of Indianapolis when we went to Gen Con. And I said, what would happen if that thing was completely buried and there was something underneath it? And that's where that came from.
So we got books, and then I'm going to say imagination, very active imagination. Great, Tom, do you have anything to add where you get your inspiration from?
No. No, just kidding. A lot of times, I think Buck and Kirby bring up some good points there with kind of imagining different scenarios, but I tend to draw a lot from what's going on in the world, and then it may not be depending on the game, it may not be a actual recreation of that event, but certain events may lead me to an idea of a what-if type scenario. During election season, a couple elections back, I thought, well, hey, what if there was a villainous plot that was kind of running with this election in the background? How would that potentially impact things with supervillains running around potentially?
That sounds dangerously close to real world politics, Graytom.
Yeah. So it just, I, so I'm looking at, okay, what's happening with the real world, and how does that kind of impact the game and an idea that we have, and that could play into a fantasy game where, you know, there might be a coronation event or something like that. So I kind of draw from what's going on in the world, my own experiences, and what I've seen. One creative one was on a long drive. I was heading home, and I was going to be in the car for a couple hours by myself. I'd run out of things to listen to. This is before we had streaming music, so not to date myself too much, but this is before you had that ability to have constant music. So I was out in the middle of nowhere, and I was really tired of all of the CDs I had brought with me. So I'm just driving along, and I was just kind of, as I'm cruising, just thinking different scenarios, what would happen. And, you know, and just a particular what if would be like, you know, what if there was a medical helicopter somewhere? Why would somebody want to stop a medical helicopter? What, who could be on that? And it was just dreaming up a whole scenario that eventually became a superhero game. And it's just, you know, different things that, you know, what's happening in the world, different what if scenarios, why would somebody want to do something? And then what kind of story can I build around that for the characters? So,
thank you.
And that's I want to add one other thing too, as far as with, I agree with Buck too. I do find a lot of creative, you know, answers for things also from what I read and what I see on movies and TV. When I ran a Marvel campaign, I was doing their, a version of the Legacy Virus that Marvel did. That's when I was running it back then. It was current, and it was something to get my players involved because it was something they were reading in the comics, and they were trying to solve it on their own. And that's where I kind of got that idea too.
Okay. And glad you were saying something, because I want to ask you the next question, Kirby. In the games, and it could be whether for pretty much most of these questions, just so that we're all on the same page, it could be that you're a player, or it can be you're the DM. So you can answer them through both lenses or just one lens. But the question I had was, what do you like to see most out of the games that you play in, or that the games that you're a part of?
I don't know. I have to say that I always like a good story. I always like a good fight too. I mean, I could get easily distracted in my own right. As I've said, I have, you know, attention deficit disorder. And so a lot of times I will blank off, and this is where I get a lot of my ideas too. But I like to see a good story, as I said. I like to see a good combat, but I also, as a player, I like to play different characters. I don't usually go to the norm much anymore. Being, you know, all of us have played D&D for years and years and years. So, actually, I'm in a game right now with Grey Tome, where we're in Ravenloft, and I thought to myself a few weeks prior, I said, what would be cool for a paladin to have some kind of, you know, history that he has to try to atone for, and that's why he's going to be good. And so I thought about being a tiefling paladin, and I'm having so much fun with that right now, because, you know, it's kind of like a drow. It's kind of like a race that everyone kind of fears and hates, but he's trying to actually crawl his way back and prove that and help his ancestral that, you know, they are good, or some of them are good.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. And
I really like that.
Yeah. And I think I like that a lot, as far as, you know, being able to have fun with my own character and have fun with what I'm doing. Because if you don't like your character, and I've been in games before, if you don't like your character, or something's happened to your character and it's just not fun anymore, then why play? And,
oh, yeah.
And I've been in situations before where I've had DMs who have punished me, not per se the way I'm playing and whether I've been a problem player, which is what we've gone into, but the people around me have not liked the way my character has gone, as far as, you know, being able, you know, some power gaming, and I'm doing more damage than somebody else in combat or whatnot. And, you know, what he tried to do was he tried to balance it out by giving me less health than everyone else. So pretty much any combat, one hit took me down. And I just, at that point, I just felt like I was done with the character, because I couldn't do anything with him. And it kind of took the wind out of my sails with the guy, and then he ended up just killing him off. And I brought somebody else back, which had the same type of thrive and abilities that the other one had, and the players around me didn't care for that either. So
a good challenge is what I'm seeing, like what I'm getting from you is what you crave, a good challenge in picking a player or a character, yeah. I should say.
Yeah. Good story too, and also like good twists, plot twists, and all that also like goes towards the story. Sorry to keep rambling.
No problem. Moving right along, Gray. How about you? I mean, we hear the good story and the good character. What do you like to see most in games?
Well, I think all of us as players and even game masters, dungeon masters, whatever you may do, you know, we do like the story, but I think the sense of adventure and that experience that we have coming together, just, you know, overcoming a challenge, you know, a particular situation comes out where like a particularly epic fight where it's really coming down to the wire. It's been orchestrated in a way and we're all really having to pool our resources, come together and persevere through whatever challenge. It may not even be combat necessarily. I've been in games where we've had really good play on riddles, where we're really trying to think our way out of a particular situation. Kirby did some games with that, where it wasn't that you were having to bash the challenge down. It's okay, you're in a situation, you've got to figure this riddle out, and you know we're there racking our brains trying to figure, okay, how do we get out of the situation? You know, good riddles, you know. So I like that sense of a challenge and overcoming that. So I think in addition to, yes, the adventure, the storyline are important, but you know, there needs to be a good nemesis to it. And it's a popular thing where, you know, yeah, you've got these great heroes, the players pump up their player characters really strong and it's like, it's all about them, but you know, we need good villains, good challenges for us to stand up to, something that's really going to push us to the limit. And So I enjoy those types of scenarios where I can come through on top, and maybe I'm not going to be able to defeat this particular challenge. Maybe I'm going to have to withdraw, and yeah, my pride takes a hit on that because I can't just storm all through, but maybe I got to fall back, rethink the approach. Is there something else I can do, some other way I can approach this problem? So, and then that really gets me involved and interested in what's going on in the game.
Buck, I'd like for you to chime in.
I'd like to kind of agree with both these guys. I think story to me is really important. Mm-hmm. Like I've said in previous podcasts, I do think that combat tends to get a little tedious sometimes. It kind of drags on a bit. But I really do find story interesting, like plot twists and such. One thing I find kind of interesting, Kurt mentioned that someone in his party was upset that he was doing more damage. I don't think I've ever understood that. I don't think I've ever understood why you would not be supportive of a person in your party killing bad guys. But that's just my
yeah,
opinion.
Exactly.
Well, more than likely, you're taking all the limelight.
Well, to me, like it's kind of like you would run into this in World of Warcraft where people would complain about overhealing. My whole thing was, you know, did you survive? If you survived, then you won. So that's what the point of the... Well, the point of the game is to have fun.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, but...
I was just gonna say, as I told someone, and now I'll tell you, Kirby, you just gotta realize sometimes we all can't be heroes.
Yes, I agree with that.
Sure. I know that was a poor attempt at humor, but
but in what I have to say with that though, it was unfortunately a poor DM's choice that you know, there were a lot of times that the DM could have said no to some of the things I was asking him. As far as what, you know, the way my weapons worked and my magic stuff worked, and they were way too powerful than they should have been, and you know, Buck was right. Basically, the guys around me, they weren't getting much game time in the fight because I was doing so much damage, because I was a thief that could sneak attack, and I was using three blades that whipped out of a bandolier. And each blade had my sneak attack damage. And that DM could have told me, hey, that doesn't work that way. And it could be one with the five die six damage or whatever it was at the time. But I was doing like 40, 50, 60 points of damage in one shot with that thing. And so the the actual players decided that I was way too powerful, and the fighter was doing, and the thief was doing way more damage than, say, the meat shield, the fighter was, and, you know, the ranger, and they were. So when he tried to fix that, it just went downhill from there.
Before I move on to the next question, a couple of things just to follow up with that. Were you the same level as the other characters, and how experienced was the DM?
The DM was very experienced. I mean, he'd been running D&D longer than I had at the time, and he'd been playing along that way too. He to me was more structured and had he didn't have many paths you could take. They were more one rail type things where you had to find where you needed to go to do things as opposed to explore the world. But he was very seasoned. And I was the same level as everyone else. And it was just the way I took feats and the way everything worked out with using the rules the way they were supposed to be run. It's just my character ended up being really, really, really good at combat.
Okay. So my next question is going to be for Greytome.
Uh-huh.
And Greytome, you actually touched on this. So I was like, oh, great segue into it. But are riddles or puzzles good for games?
I think a lot of times, okay, my preface is by saying it's going to kind of depend on, you've got to read your group. Now, I'm approaching this kind of from the angle of the game master. Okay, I've written a game. Are the puzzles going to really fit what the group wants? I think, yes, they do add a dynamic that's not as frequently explored. I do try to work them in whenever I can, because I do think it gives another exercise where the players aren't relying so much on the stats on the paper, but their own intuitiveness, their own creativity to solve a problem. It's not about min-maxing like, okay, hey, I'm going to get a +5 on this. Let me roll. Okay, well, I missed it. Who else has got the next highest roll? So I think puzzles and other non-combative challenges that put the players in a situation where they have to think their way out, I do think that works, but it would need to be something in the game. Unfortunately, I have been in games where riddles have been brought in. I've really enjoyed it. I've really gotten into it. There was one particular experience. It was a Dungeons and Dragons game, and recently with some riddles set up, and it's just we're working with these. Me and one other player in the group were really the ones that were carrying the entire party, because the rest of the party was bored because like, well, where are we going to fight things? Well, we haven't gotten to that point. We've got this riddle we got to solve to get past this part of the dungeon, and no one else was involved in it. Me, one other player, were like, okay, how do you solve this? Okay, and so we're trying to figure out the answers to it. So then you got to kind of read your group, but personally, yes, I do like them, and I think most times the players do. But I try and give everyone a little bit of a chance to shine too. So if someone really enjoys riddles, I'll try and work puzzles or riddles in there so that they get something that's interesting for them, because not everybody's into hack and slash,
right?
Kind of known, but.
Buck, yay or nay, what do you think about riddles or puzzles in the game?
I think you absolutely should have puzzles in the game and riddles. I think it it seems to me that a lot of role-playing games end up with who can hit the hardest, and that's the person that's the side that ends up winning. And I think that having puzzles and other ways of navigating a scenario make it more interesting and make the game more dynamic. Like the first Pathfinder game I ever ran, when I ran for you and Chris at Gen Con, and I used the Fibonacci sequence as a combination on a lock. Now, I kind of assumed that you guys knew what that was, but nobody knew what it was, so it kind of backfired a little bit. But when I set up a game, I try to set up five encounters. I want to have at least two of them to be role-playing, two of them to be combat, and one of them to be like something other, something like a puzzle. And I try to incorporate what the players, like what their classes are. So if there's a rogue, I want, you know, locks and things like traps to be set, traps to be, undone and stuff like that.
People lose the tips of their fingers.
People lose the tips of their fingers and stuff like that. Because I think it comes, you know, it happens all the time. Like games that I've I've been in at Gen Con in games that I like, homebrewed games or even modules, it kind of comes down to who does the most damage. And I don't think that, I mean, I think when you're younger, that's awesome. But I think as you get a little bit older, you want a little bit more dynamic quality to the experience. So that's my answer on that.
And Kirby?
I have had riddles in my games, and I've done such things, and I always do things that move the story along, whether there's combat or whether there is a riddle to be solved. You have to test the waters with your players. If you think you have, and I don't put them in the first adventure, the second adventure, or even the third adventure that we've gone on a campaign, I kind of feel out my players to see if their ones are going to go into those riddles. And then I might throw one somewhere and see what the feedback is for them. And if there are a few people that say, yeah, I really dig this, then I'll do something else like that. So like I said, you just have to feel out, you have to cater to your players. You got to make sure what their strengths and weaknesses are. One other thing I thought that 4th edition touched on that was pretty cool was the skill challenges, where you got experience points from doing skill tests that you used your dice or your ingenuity for doing different things. Crossing, you know, a river, you might have a couple different skills, or people have different skills that can cross the river, like leap or swim or something. And you got so many successes for each different skill in order to cross the river. If you made all those, you know, skill checks, then you got, you know, 300-400 XP. So I thought that was really cool how 4th edition had encompassed that. And I think if I start running 5th edition, I might take a look and see if they have that in there too, or make some house rule for it.
And before we move on to the next question, and I'm going to position this to any of you, so anybody can just jump in, but do you think riddles or puzzles should be put in such a way that if the player does not solve it, their character dies? Like a death trap?
No. No.
Yeah, I would kind of encourage, yeah, I agree with Kirby died. Usually a death trap that completely kill the character off, I probably wouldn't, unless it was the stakes of the game where it's like, okay, we're going into this and this is going to be really, really lethal. Because the last thing I want to do is have my wizard get wiped out completely because I can't figure out what's black and white and red all over. You know, so, you know, who wants to die because they didn't know what a newspaper was?
I thought that was me giving you a black eye.
There was an adventure that I ran that was kind of like my homage to the Goonies, where they were on a flying pirate island and they were going through, and there were many riddles that they had to solve. None of them were extremely deadly, but they did do a lot of damage if, you know, you didn't do the right things. But I mean, it wasn't anything that was life threatening, because I'm not out to kill players. I'm not one of those DMs that does that. I'm more into, as I've always said, and my mantra is, you know, I follow a story, and if it makes sense to the story, that's what I do. And a lot of people, you know, gravitate toward that when I run those. But one example was, there was a fireplace that had a riddle that basically was fire. So the thing was, they wanted you to, you know, make a fire in the fireplace, and that would reveal a doorway that was, you know, past the fire when the fire went down. And if you hadn't, and you put your hand in there, there were spikes that came up from the ground up that did so much damage. So that was something that I found in a riddle book that I thought was pretty cool. But there was nothing as far as deadly per se in those traps and riddles that I'd had.
I might have to take away your DM card if you don't believe in killing players, but I digress. Buck, jumping to you, how should new players to role-playing games be treated? And how long do you think a new player is considered a new player? Like, how many years or months or weeks under their belt? So I know it's a two-part question.
I definitely think you should cut them some slack, because I remember the first time I played a role-playing game. It was a Marvel game that Tony ran. I had never run into anything like that before. And it can be a little bit overwhelming. The books are pretty long. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of things to remember. So I think you should be pretty helpful. You know, it's a new experience. It's sometimes can be a little weird. I would say, like, depending on the frequency that you play, I would say maybe half a dozen sessions. I think that's a pretty good amount of time to kind of figure out, okay, this is what's happening. You know, like their character may have leveled. They know how to pick spells. They know where to look in the book for certain things. So I think that's, it's not that, once you figure out what it is, it's not that hard. And most games are pretty similar. And like, I think if you sat down with a group and they were playing Pathfinder and you sat down with another group and they were playing D&D, like 5th edition, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference until combat showed up. And even then, until you got to like advantage, disadvantage, it might not even be that clear. So I think if you figure out one, kind of know what's going to happen with the other ones. But I would say about half a dozen sessions, I think.
We always go back to combat. What about you, Kirby? What do you think? How should you handle new players? And how long is a new player considered a new player?
I don't know. I'd have to probably agree with Buck. Probably half a dozen games. I mean, I've seen them all the time when I used to hang out a lot at one of the comic shops my friends own, or I ran a few D&D games there. There were a few that I've seen start out that were just kind of almost spectators and not actually role-playing in the game. And then the more games that they were in and the more games they were exposed to, you could tell, you know, that they were really starting to pick it up and they were starting to do the role-playing and they were getting into the story and they were kind of, you know, they kind of found the exploration of, you know, D&D is pretty much whatever you want to do, or role-playing is basically whatever you want to do in the game is open to you. I think it probably took about that, you know, maybe half a dozen game sessions. Some picked it up quicker than others, depending on how many games, different games they were in, because they ran different types of role-playing games there, too. And a lot of them were in 3 or 4 games at a time, because they were young kids that had a lot of time. So,
great, huh?
Well, I think it really does depend on the person. I'd give them a couple sessions at least before. But in even that case, I wouldn't necessarily consider them an experienced player, you know, so I would go a little bit easier on them. I had a new player once who I, as the game master, failed to explain how air force fields, physical force fields, don't necessarily block energy weapons. You know, a shield made out of rotating air won't block an energy blast. This particular player, his character came crashing into the ground and, you know, I stopped in the game and I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm rolling up my other character. This one's down. And I'm like, you're not out of the game completely. You just need some healing. And it's just, you know, your air shield doesn't stop an energy attack.
But had that not happened, the greatest superhero ever known would have never been born.
How did that play into Captain America? I don't understand. So it's just that. But no, yeah,
I would go a slight further and say Superman, but I don't want to really go there on this channel.
Exactly. So it's just no. In my that particular Marvel campaign, that was one of, if not the most powerful character that came up in the game. And part of it wasn't just the players, but that was a case where, you know, somebody took something. It's like they learned from it. But yeah, you give the player a couple sessions, and I kind of digressed off the topic here. A couple sessions to get from starting to you know, more experienced. But you know, you kind of have to give them a little bit of leeway with rules and understanding how combat would work, how role playing would work, and how, okay, you may want to do something, but then there's a certain game mechanic that works. And I've read reviews and kind of my own experience in reading Star Wars and then trying to run a Star Wars game, where what I saw Jedi doing in the movies are like, oh, this is awesome, here you go. Oh, wait a minute. That game mechanic, and that was as a newer DM, I was game mastering Star Wars, and that was kind of my own lack of understanding with how what I saw in the movies versus what that game mechanic let the Jedi do it's like, oh, that doesn't actually work as well. They're not going to be able to do what Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke Skywalker can do necessarily as these low-level characters in the game. So, you know, it kind of goes for game masters too, but you give them a couple sessions and it's going to be different for each player, and you kind of help them out and explain the rules. And me personally, I'm a little forgiving if there's a problem that comes in. I'll fudge a role that, you know, they may not quite understand how game mechanics work, and I don't want the players to be penalized with that. So it just I'll enforce a stronger penalty and less fudging as I get characters that are more experienced to kind of know, and like, okay, they've been bruised a little bit in the game, and it's like, okay, they get it. Their character might be down a little bit, but not completely out, and some players may look at that as a way to go. But newer players can potentially get discouraged when they're out of a couple rounds of an encounter or a particular event, or their power doesn't quite work exactly. Okay, how do I work this to my advantage? And that's something you can as you go along.
And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to flip it to another type of player, and I'm going to direct this to Kirby. Rules lawyers, the person who has the book, or as I like to call them, the second DM. How do you deal with them?
You got me here. I don't really have an answer right away. Put me on the spot. because I can be that rules warrior sometimes. And
no.
I think you know that for sure. So, but I, you know, in as a player, I just try to make sure, I guess, make sure everything is done right between, you know, the DMs and the players. As a DM, I mean, I don't follow all the rules, and sometimes I do that just because I want to make sure that things are going to, you know, run smoothly, per se. There are some things that, like, even Grey Tome said, sometimes with new players, you kind of got to fudge the rules a little bit. But you do have to go back and say, well, this is the way it was supposed to be done. And I have not, and a lot of times I take those rules lawyers and I look and they'll tell me, this is the way it's going to be done. And I said, well, this is the way I did it this time. But in the future, we will follow the rules the way it's supposed to be. Because I don't want to bog down the game looking through a book, trying to make sure that we're doing it correctly. And then I will go back and read it on my leisure after the game and work accordingly.
So, just to follow up with that. So, would you, if Buck was playing a game with you and Buck wanted to fire his slingshot, but because of the distance was incorrect, would you be that guy that said, well, technically you can't do that?
I would probably, if he wanted to fire his slingshot and it was good for the story, I might actually say technically you couldn't do that, but I would probably, if he had the role and if he had, you know, the right things to do it, then yeah. I mean, if it's a high enough role,
Let me change this way. You and Buck are playing together as players. Would you tell him he could or could not do it?
I would probably tell him that he couldn't do it. But that would be up to if we were playing in a game, though, that would be up to the DM or the GM's discretion of whether he would be able to do it or not. And I would always go with the wishes of the DM or GM.
Okay, I'm going to just kiss you on the cheek. And Grey Tome, what do you think?
With rules lawyers, I've been in games where there have been players that have understood the rules better than I have, just because they've had, you know, more experience with a particular game or just more time in between, you know, rounds, because I'm constantly running everything around the table. And I try and look at, okay, what do the rules actually say? Show me where in the book real quick, you know, okay. And then I'll make kind of a decision saying that, okay, that kind of fits, or because I do try to follow the rules as much as I can when I'm running the game. So if a player does say, well, the rule actually says that the range of the slingshot is actually going to be 100 yards short of where it would need to go. Well, okay. You know, you could try it, but you're going to need a natural 20. Now, as a player, I might mention if they weren't sure, like, you know, okay, I'm going to throw my slingshot. It's like, man, it's going to be a tough shot. You're going to be about, you know, 100 yards or so short of where the range of the slingshot is. Do you have anything else? I'll usually try and shut a player down that way, try and keep it going. And I try to, if we do have a player that says, well, no, you can't do that because you're 100 yards short, I'll look and say, okay, yeah, the range is it. Do you have anything else that would allow you to do that? And then I'll see if there, you know, a way to make that situation work.
So it sounds like if you're a GM and you have a rules lawyer and they mention stuff like that, you would listen to them and most likely agree with them and say, Buck can't shoot that slingshot because the range isn't.
Yeah, they set the rules and it's like, okay, you know, the dragon's 200 yards away, but the slingshot's range is 100 yards. Then I'm like, well, you know, that's like twice the normal range. That may not be the weapon to do it. Now, as the one running the game, I might decide that. And I had a similar situation to this in a game where a very powerful weapon was being brought to bear on something. I'm like, well, it doesn't really scale right. But I'm like, okay, you're going to have massive minuses to do this. It's going to practically be impossible. But there's always that miraculous natural 20 that comes up. That is like, okay, you know, if you can hit that, I'll give it to you. And I've had players nail that, and it's like the impossible, you know, David Goliath, that one in a million shot that came through. And it's, I would allow that, but I would listen to the rules player, because if there is a rule that specifies it, obviously, you know, I try and keep it along with the rules. But, you know, especially running the game, I can kind of delegate, okay, how hard am I going to enforce that? That weapon may not work. What other option do you have? Or I can say, yes, that's true. You're at maximum range. You're going to have this penalty. It's going to be a stiff penalty. Give the roll a shot. Most likely you're going to miss.
And I'm going to kiss you on the cheek as well.
Yeah.
Buck, come on, bring it home. How do you deal with rules, lawyer? I know you're going to give me one.
So when you mean rules lawyer, do you mean the guy that's just... that just happens to like pop up when you want to try it. And say in that scenario, say the guy that says, oh, well, that range is too long. There's no way you'd be able to do
right,
that. Or is it the guy that's constantly got the book open?
And the guy is, like, who constantly has the book open and who is basically acting as the second DM.
Well, as the DM, and, you know, you guys kind of know me. I tend to be a little direct sometimes. I would probably tell them that I'm the DM. I'm the one that makes, you know, I'm the one that has a final say here. I think in our current group, we don't really have that problem, but we have run into that problem in the past. And the issue with that is it delays the game. So you'll have like an hour and a half argument over a lightning bolt. And,
yeah,
you know, people are bored and it gets really annoying. And so I think you need to kind of tell them, you know, that you're the one that has the final say. And I think it's up to the DM to kind of put their foot down and say, this is my ruling and that's it. You know, if you don't like it, well, it's just too bad. Like, I'm DM. If a lightning bolt strikes your mech, a lightning bolt strikes your mech.
All right. So, going to you, Greytone. I'm not going to phrase it as just a yes or no, because I do want you to explain. But I really want you to think about this. Whether you're the DM or not, it doesn't matter whether you're DM or not. But are the DM/GMs allowed to have fun in the game? Or is the game for them a chore?
I would say that it absolutely has to be fun for the game master or dungeon master, depending. And I think, because if it's not, then it's going to come through in the game. Because I really do enjoy it. I enjoy running the games. I have a lot of fun with that. And, you know, I want to tell a story. I want to get, and I can kind of inject myself into the story through the various NPCs that I'm running, through some of the villains, things like that, the other characters that are running around. So I can kind of get into the story and go with the characters along this journey. But I think it really does need to be fun, or, you know, really, why do it? You know, it's just, if you are running a game because there's no one else that's going to do it, and then I guess I really would be nice to play, but no, I don't get to roll up my own character. I got to run this thing, so I'll run the module. Now, I think the group really needs to have a conversation and say, okay, we'll rotate it. You know, maybe we'll have someone else run the game each week or something like that. Because I really think that, yes, the Game Master, Dungeon Master absolutely should be having fun doing this. For me personally, I have a ton of fun doing it. It's something I really enjoyed. I've enjoyed doing these things for years. I hope that comes along with the players. I know I do get some pretty nasty mail from Buck and Kirby after the games, but I'm sure that's just impulsive stuff. Okay, that was a joke there, guys. So, got nothing but crickets here, man.
Tough room,
man. Geez, yeah. So it's like, hey, boom, hey.
Three guys, I told you not to mention those letters, Tony. What are you
okay.
doing?
Okay. Oh, sorry, man. Okay. no, I think you're really, the DM should enjoy it. You know, have fun doing it. So if you don't, you're going to preface it with this. I have had players in two particular games that I ran in. These were players that did not really enjoy running games, but they both, at one point in time, had an idea. They're like, I really want to run this thing. They were one-shot adventures. They were both very well done. I had a blast. They were a lot of fun. They were really well thought out. But then they're like, really, would you mind running again next week? Because I really don't want to make this a campaign. And I'm like, no, that's okay. I really enjoy running. But it's not for everybody. And I don't think a player should feel obligated to do it. I think the group's really got to figure out, okay, who wants to do it? If one person isn't really the one that wants to be the one to run the games all week, rotate it, find a way, because if you're not enjoying it, you're not having fun, it's going to come through. It's really going to show through.
Yep, I get you. Kirby, what do you think? Should the DM/GM have fun, or is it a chore for them?
Oh, absolutely. You should have fun, and if it stops being fun, then maybe, you know, it's as Great Tome touched on, maybe it's time for someone else to take the reins and, you know, try that and become the DM for a while, play in a different game. But absolutely, I've seen games go, you know, so long, and the DM or GM has decided, you know, I'm gonna stop this for now, and we're gonna go to something else, and maybe we'll come back to it. I've seen GMs that have taken that break because, you know, they've had that writer's block or they've had something they've had to go. But absolutely, back to what you're saying, I agree with Gray Tome when he says you have to have fun with it, and if it's fun for you as a DM or a GM, then great. But if you're more like wanting that player and you want to you know, be in the adventure and not run the thing, because it is two different, you know, sides of a coin, it's not just for everybody, you know,
being God or playing God. What about you, Buck?
Of course I think that the DM should have fun. And I do think in some cases that, like our friend Ray, for example, I think he very much prefers being the DM rather than a player. I think I've only seen him two, maybe three times on the other side of the DM screen where he was with us.
Yeah, I think very, he prefers rarely.
That way. Yeah, right. And I would also think, I don't want to put words in Tony's mouth, but I think Tony prefers the DM. I just kind of guessing here.
It is kind of, I do, and I have noticed if I come back to playing, it's sometimes it's a little hard for me because I'm like, okay, wait a minute, someone else is calling the shots. Wait a minute. So it's just a different mind. But yeah, I would probably prefer to run the game. I mean, I like being in the games, but, you know, just personal preference.
Right. And when we got this Pathfinder group started, I was trying to figure out like what we're going to do, like how we're going to get this started. And I asked someone if they would mind running the game in the beginning to get us started. And they said yes. And about a week before we were going to go to Gen Con, completely forgot that I had asked them to do that and didn't seem any like interested in it at all. So I figured, well, if no one else is going to DM, I have to. And as you guys know, and I'm people who have listened to this podcast heard me speak before, I do have a visual impairment, so I can't read the books. And it's a little daunting when you have a 500-page tome of rules that you can't see and you're trying to run a game. I think it went pretty well, but that's generally the reason why I stay away from DMing. And the only reason I did it was because nobody else was doing it. But I enjoyed it. I had fun, but I do prefer being a player.
To follow up with that, and I pray to God that the answer isn't what I think it, but it wasn't me that you asked.
No.
Okay. Whew, okay.
Oh, no, no.
Very good, because I would have felt really bad. Okay. So, moving right along. Okay, Kirby, this question is for you. I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself here.
Okay.
So, how do you feel about board games and their popularities now versus your traditional role-playing tabletop games?
We had this conversation a little bit after my podcast. I think they're starting to, what they call RPGs in a box, these board games are really starting to kind of incorporate what D&D has done for years, though they're taking the GM out of it now, and they're actually computerizing it, putting it on computers and putting it on, you know, iPads and stuff, where normally a person would run that part of the game and the players would play the adventurers against that particular player. And if the player would end up the player who was against all of them, then they call them, you know, all against one type game. If the players would win, they would win the game. If the one player would win, then he would win the game. So, and they're starting, I mean, they have a lot of really good ones out there that do that. They have an app for Descent, which is a board game, which is like a dungeon crawler. And then they have another one that is Mansions of Madness, which is more like a horror type game where you're going through a mansion. And there's different puzzles and clues and stuff that are on that app. And they're very good. And you could almost do a role-playing experience through those. And it's very close to that point where you can actually take your character like D&D and level it up and continue on, play very different, you know, very many scenarios through a game. So it's getting very close to what we're playing D&D now with miniatures and stuff like that. It's on table.
Okay, so getting very close. Buck, do you have anything to add on that?
I don't have a lot of experience with those types of games, but I do think that they could potentially be like, I don't want to say gateway, because that's the connotation of that, but a gateway for like people who may not know how to play D&D or intimidated by it. It could be a way to like get them into it. Like I tried running like a kind of a mock D&D game for my daughter who was 5 years old at the time. And she was like, "Daddy, this is weird," and walked away. So, and we weren't using miniatures. We weren't using anything, you know. So I think that if you had like a box that had, you know, a grid with like an artfully designed map and little figures and stuff for them to look at, it would probably help like the younger kids or people who aren't familiar with those types of games kind of step into that world and you know, see if they like it or not.
And Grato, what are your thoughts?
I think there's definitely something there. I know I've played some of those games and really enjoy them. Recently picked up one by Flying Frog Games called Shadows of Brimstone, and it's a tabletop, Kirby said, RPG in a box, because it's kind of geared towards a campaign mode where the characters grow over time. I think from the last couple of years at Gen Con, that has really started to build up more. Board games are becoming Gen Con for many years, it was all D&D, all tabletop RPGs. Then Magic the Gathering became a big thing. Then the computer gaming was really big. Now it seems like, based on the amount of space allocated to the show floor when you're walking around Gen Con, there's a lot of different board games. And a lot of these have started to incorporate an RPG aspect to them. Now, they're not as flexible as the tabletop RPGs that we have, where we basically can go anywhere we want and the characters have a lot of options. Most of the boxed board games that incorporate some RPG elements, they're limited in what you can and can't do. Yes, there might be some choices you make, but they're generally on a track, or there's a very linear ascension of characters and that character growth. Whereas your fifth edition Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder, you know, you've got a lot of options to explore, a lot of source material that you can actually really expand your character on. But they could be, Buck said, a good way as a stepping stone to introduce new players into some of these game components there. And there's such a wide variety of them available out there. You know, I've got the Castle Ravenloft board game. It incorporates some limited RPG. It really is a fighting game at its heart. Yes, there are some utility spells you build up. There is a dynamic that lets you level up your character from first level to second level in the game. You know, and but it really is more about, okay, I go here, fight monsters, and I'm trying to accomplish something. So a lot of those RPG in a box ones are kind of, okay, there's a map, you're moving from point A to point B, there's an objective, and that's what you're going to do. You can't leave or deviate from that story or really kind of go your own direction. So, but still, with new players, might be a good way to get their feet wet in it, to kind of dabble in it without having to go into the full-blown, I mean, and to be honest, if you wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons or run Dungeons & Dragons right now, you're going to be into it. You've got three books you have to buy. You might be able to find a little more cost-effective board game that would give you that same experience with your player group and get used to it. So
yeah, I definitely like that point that Buck made and that you reiterated, that it could be a good lead-in to actually role-playing. And while we're on that, I'm going to go straight to you, Buck. I'm going to give you a good question.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, I guess it's kind of bad that you go first because they're going to take the time to think about it, but that's okay. You got this. What do you crave the most when you're in the game? Is it role-playing, a good story, or combat?
I would put role-playing and a good story kind of at the same level. One of the things I enjoy the most is kind of dealing with moral vagueness, like trying to figure out how do you handle a certain situation. Like a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, we had a situation where we had the captured, it was a hobgoblin. We were trying to figure out whether we should execute it or not. And I think we had five members in the party, and I think two said to execute, two said not to execute. So it was up to me to make the final decision. And I really enjoyed that. I found that more interesting than the actual fight that led up to capturing the hobgoblin. And not that I'm saying that the fight wasn't interesting. It was just in my preference that I'd like having, not necessarily arguments, but debates with the players. And I think that brings out the characters more. And it definitely adds like flavor to the story.
So in order not to leave our listeners hanging, what happened to the hobgoblin?
I cut off his head.
And there you have it, people. Yeah. He cut off his head.
So the fun part was, so I decided that I was going to do it. And then I handed the sword to the one character who really wanted to do it. And he said, no, I don't want his blood on my hands. I'm like, all right. So I just went ahead and... So it was kind of tense and fun, and I really enjoyed it.
And just for the listeners again, can you tell us what class you were playing?
Paladin.
Okay. That's going to be important down the line, everyone. So, Grey Tome, your turn. What do you crave the most when you're playing the game? Is it the role-playing, a good story, or combat?
Really none of the above. It's when I get to really show the players why it's most important that I be in that group. Because it's really, you know, the Grey Tome show. And the other players are really my supporting cast. So when you have the game set, I'm just joking there. So, okay, really, this is a tough room. So I thought that was a pretty good lead in.
Well, I think people laugh if it's funny.
Oh, man. Is there another podcast I can get into tonight? So let's see. Is it too late? So, no. I think a blend of all three, really. I do like some role playing. My games do tend to, and this has come up in some other podcasts, where, you know, I kind of take a lighter heart to things. You know, it's more the classic good versus evil. I really do enjoy getting into games where they get into a different style than what I typically play. And, you know, because it is challenging, you know, and it's just like, you know, what would these players do? And, you know.
But surely mm-hmm. you have one that you crave above the other ones, right?
Yeah, I think
what is the one that you really like?
You're really going to pin me down on this.
Yes, one. I'm going to pin you down on this one.
I would really say that I think story, really. Because just running around fighting monsters, while fun, I'm really like, okay, why exactly are we here? What exactly are we doing? You know, I think the story for me really drives everything else. The role playing and the action come from that. So otherwise, it's just like, well, anybody could throw a bunch of goblins at you to say fight, and then it's just like, okay, we're all hanging out at the tavern. Well, what's the purpose for all this? Because I kind of like the story as it's all coming together. One particular game that Kirby did, just a phenomenal blend of, and not to just shower praise, but I think it's really is warranted here. He put a lot of work into this particular game. And it was that great blend of action and role-playing and this overlying story that was weaving around it really brought it all together. And at the end of it, we're like, wow, this was a lot of fun. This was awesome. So I think story for me is going to be the main thing.
And you, Kirby, role-playing, a good story, or combat?
It all depends on what Kirby you're talking about. If you're talking about the Kirby who started out in the role-playing, starting in the games, I was all about combat. But as I started running the games and I started learning how to role-play and do things, because that's really when I started learning, was actually doing all the NPCs when I was running the stories. I absolutely think that story should drive everything, and there should be a purpose for a combat, and there should be a purpose for whatever you're doing. And I believe it would be story, and then role play, and then combat. And I'd like to say a little example too. There were a bunch of us that were in a game that was run at Gen Con 1 year, and we were with there were about three or four of us that were there, and then there were two players that were there that were also there, but not from our group. And it was a Star Wars game, and we were supposed to, I guess, raid this facility or do some kind of thing.
Oh, the Star Wars game.
Yes. And the four of us, or the five of us that were tight-knit that played in the game together, and then the two other ones were ready for some kind of action to happen. And basically, the five of us that were tight-knit group did a stealth mission and completely took the fighting completely out of it. And the other two players weren't too happy with the four of us or five of us, but the GM was really impressed with what we did to get around the combat, because I guess other scenarios that they had done, they were killing off the players because it was such a vicious, you know, cycle. But we had gotten around a lot of the combat by, you know, ingenuity. And I believe that's basically what I'm trying to base my point is that, you know, if you have combat, it depends on, you know, whether the story drives it or how your players are going to get around the situation.
And just to add on to that for the listeners is that the two people who were there who didn't like us using the skills the way they did said, this is called Star Wars, not Star Peace.
Yeah, oh God, I remember that.
And I remember they were actually running into the storyteller later on that day, asking him how other players did, and he was saying no one came as close as you guys. He said, I've never seen so many skills being used, and I think it was just because of the fact that we all know that, at least I feel like, combat is a serious thing, and sometimes we don't do so well, so might as well try every avenue before you go into combat. But
Remember that. Players were really not liking the way we were playing the game. You know, they were really gung-ho on combat, and they're like, no, we're supposed to sneak in here and do this, and this is the story that we've been kind of set up with, this little demo encounter, so...
So, the final question actually goes to Greytome to start us off.
Hey.
So, Greytome, thinking from when you very first started playing role-playing games, as a person, what benefits would you say role-playing games have given you? What can you say that, you know, because I've role-played games, I'm... you know, I'm more outgoing or whatever it may be. What benefits have role-playing games impacted on your life?
I think through many, many years of gaming, from when I started this in grade school up to today, it's the people that I've met. Everybody on this podcast has been a friend of mine for a long, long time. And, you know, we've been through a lot in life and everything, and we've kind of scattered to the four winds with different people living in different areas now and everything. But what these groups that we've met regularly and we gained together, you know, those were really friendships that I've had all my life now. Yeah, some of my friends that I game with, they've kind of moved on. I don't see them as often as I do. But really, these long-term friendships are all people that I ran games with and in their games. So by hanging out, we've got all these memories, and we get together and we reminisce about old times. And there are friends of mine I haven't seen in years. And we'll get together and like, oh, remember that one time? It's like, yeah, you know, we start telling stories and, you know, what news going on. So really, for me, the gaming has really brought me together to a great group of friends that I've known all my life and many, many years to come. I'm looking forward to what we're going to do. So that's really the key thing, is these long friendships that I have. And they came about because we're all sitting around the table, you know, on a Friday night. And, you know, this is before we had, you know, cool dungeon tiles or, you know, virtual tabletops. It was just us with a couple character sheets, some books, and some graph paper. And we were just, you know, going to save the world. You know, so it's those long friendships. That's really, for me, what I have to say that role-playing has given me all over these years, these great relationships with some great friends.
I'm sorry, I got a little sweat coming out of my eye.
No.
But I completely wholeheartedly agree, because Greytone was the very first person that introduced me into role-playing games, into this Marvel game, because I was playing comic books, and I was like, oh, this is great. So, Buck,
that seems like this about, yesterday,
man. Yeah. How about you, Buck? What benefits have you gotten from role-playing games?
I would have to echo what Tony said. You know, I've met Ed and struck up a conversation with him because I heard that he overheard him speaking about role-playing games. So that's how our friendship started, and that led directly to Tony, and that led to directly just about everyone that's involved in this site, and even Kurt, who I met a couple years ago at Gen Con for the first time. So there's that. Also, there's, you know, there's the kind of the obvious benefits of becoming creative. You know, whether you're DMing or creating a character, you have to come up with background sometimes. You want to make it interesting. You just don't want to have the same thing over and over again, so it forces that. And I think also, I'd like the fact that when we get together, we talk about not only hanging out at the comic book store, but we talk about the things that our characters went through. There's a few times on where we would play top secret games, and we would meet, we would go afterwards and get something to eat. Someone would talk about kicking open a door and pointing a gun at someone, and you could tell the people around us were like, what the hell are they talking about? You know, and it just, you know, like I like the fact that you know, where most people when they were 17 were, you know, kind of doing what everybody else does, you know, getting drunk and, you know, being silly and stupid and doing, I actually felt that we were doing something that was intelligent, that took creativity, and that was unique. And just as kind of a, you know, like an odd, this is kind of an odd connection, I guess. But so, you know, I have two little girls, and I was playing the song Puff the Magic Dragon for them. You know, it's kind of a sad song, you know, like it's about a little boy who, you know, kind of, he has this toy dragon or this dragon that he plays with, and he kind of outgrows him. You know, so my kids were like sad at the end. They're kind of crying. And I'm like, hey, guys, daddy's 40 years old, and I still play with dragons. So, and I kind of like that. And I like that. I think that that's kind of a fun way of looking at it. So that's what I have to say about that.
And just to echo what you're saying, I definitely love to be able to talk about the old stories, because I can say white boar kill Faye. And right. I have the broadest smile on my face.
Yeah, it's a lot of, I mean, I love that. It's almost like these like false memories. You know what I mean? Like we obviously didn't fight the white boar of Kilfey, you know, but it's just kind of a fun, like even that whole thing with Chris and Kurt, you were in this game, where Chris went back and he executed the kobolds. And I love bringing that up because he gets mad about it every time. It's fantastic, you know. It's great. I love it.
And I believe Kirby, in that campaign, you were playing a what?
I was playing a paladin.
Okay, yep. That's going to become important. Everyone who's listening, that's going to become important. Just know that. So Kirby, what about you? What are the impacts?
Well, I agree with both of the other two. I agree with Grey Tome and Buck as far as with the fact that, you know, I've met a lot of people through this, and I've met a lot of friends, and, you know, some of them have gotten, I've gotten really close to a lot of them. And not only has that been an impact on me, but also I was very anxious, and I had very fear of talking in front of people, and it was almost to the point where I would shake in front. If I stood in front of somebody, I would visibly shake as I was talking. And I had a fear even not being able to take speech in college because of this. And I believe D&D and, you know, role-playing games actually pretty much desensitized me and kind of like cured that fear. I still get nervous when I run a game, and I still get those anxiety attacks before I play. But when I get into actually becoming the storyteller and doing the game, as far as running the game, it tends to subside a bit. And I've just to clarify on and add to the point too, when Grey Tome and I would set up games that we would run on Gen Con, because he and I would pretty much be the ones that would run games at Gen Con for our friends that are going there, I would always ask to be the first one, because if I would not be the first one, or at least the first or second one, and, you know, if we would run it, if we come there at like Wednesday and we do it a Thursday game, I'd want to be that one, because if I wasn't that one, I would be fretting and I would be anxious the entire time waiting for that to be done. And when it is done, and how get the feedback, and usually the most good feedback that I get, you know, from the end of my games, having that rush. And I said, now I can relax, and now I can, you know, do what I need to do. But that really, and I've heard feedback from you all and people I've run with there, that it doesn't show when I'm running the game, but there is a conflict in there. And I think that actually has gotten me more, you know, actually gotten my fear of, you know, talking in front of people.
I can totally, I can totally relate. I can totally relate with what Kirby is saying. Like I go through the same thing. Even when I was running these Pathfinder games, almost 2 years ago, I would get super nervous a few hours before, trying to make sure that I had everything. And I am very uncomfortable speaking in front of people too. So I totally understand where you're coming from.
Well, I want to throw my two cents in there. Is that I agree that I'm nervous when I actually DM, because I keep thinking to myself, I don't want them to say, you just wasted 2, 3, 4 hours of my life running through this mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the type of person that I do like putting riddles and puzzles in. And Buck will tell you, I will cheer for my NPC. I hope he kicks your butt. Because I spend as much time fleshing him out, you know, I'm rooting for him, because when I DM, I am God and I control the whole world except for these PCs. So I really want it to be a good, I really want everyone to have a good time, but, you know, it's just you're, I don't know, I guess you just get a little nervous. But like I said, from all of you guys, when I see and play in your games, I can't tell that you're nervous. It does not show. And I think one of the main reasons why it doesn't show is that, from my understanding, all of you prepare. And that's like the best thing that you can do. So I actually like the fact that what benefits the most for role-playing games for me is that it kind of like just opened up creativity. And as in a podcast that will be released or should be released by now, by the time you're listening to this one, short stories. I am a person that I struggled to write. I was talked about, poked fun at my writing styles. I was told I would never graduate it. But every time I would play a role-playing game, I would jot down notes and I would want to write a story. And I would want to make it such a good story that everyone would read and say, boy, this is a good story. I wish I was in that game. And so I kept practicing and practicing and practicing. And just like any other craft, you know, you're going to get better as long as you continue to try. And so, I like the fact that role-playing games give me an escape. For a brief moment, I'm no longer Nexa or Ed. I am that Veritech pilot defending the Earth, or as my wife would say, I'm saving Azeroth. You know, you just get away and you actually get to hang out with your friends. And as you get older, you know, it's hard to meet new friends. You gotta keep the ones that you get.
Yeah, exactly.
This is true.
Or even admit to my current friends that I do this.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, yeah, like a lot of, yeah, there's, yeah. It's funny, like I'm on such an island, like none of the like people that I hang out with, like in this area in real life, like none of them listen to the music that I listen to. You know, none of them read the books that I read or game at all. So it's just like a huge part of my life. I feel like I'm Batman. You know, like this huge part of my life is kept from them. It's not like I'm not afraid. Like if they asked me, I would tell them. But you can just kind of keep it to yourself, I guess.
Because I'm Batman. I think
in some social circumstances, it's just like, you know, there's me, and then there's that fact that, oh, like, what do you do? I'm like, well, I'm really involved in astronomy and things like that. I never really open up with, oh, man, I play this awesome wizard in a Pathfinder game, a Dungeons & Dragons game, and you know, I'm running two D&D games right now. I never open with that because I think it's gotten out, you know, I've been working at the company I've been working at for a long time. So it didn't take people long to realize when I was gone for a week in August, like, oh, where are you going, you know? You know, it just, Ed, do we have a few minutes ago? I don't want to, I've got a quick story, but I didn't know what time-wise everybody was
doing. We're doing good. After you finish up your thought, I want to give everyone a chance to have final thoughts, but go ahead, finish up.
Okay, just unrelated to the topic there, but you talk about how you have two different lives. I'm at a trade show. Okay, so the work I do, I travel occasionally in different cities and I'm at a trade show. So I'm 4 days, I'm in this 10 by 10 booth selling various products of the different clients that we work with. Okay, so on there, across from me is a tool display, you know, a metal grinder, sparks flying, everything like that. This guy, big dude that's running this thing. I'm there for 4 days. So eventually, there's another person that's across from me, and we start talking, and she's got a new puppy. I had a new kitten, and so we're exchanging pictures. And then this guy comes over, and he's like, oh, yeah, he's like, here's my puppy and everything. So we start talking. And you know, obviously, you know, I go to trade shows occasionally. Well, they're called shows. You're going to that trade show, you're going to this show or a market or something like that. Well, he's talking about this and he's like, yeah, and I've got this con in, you know, Cleveland. Well, that was a trigger word for me because, you know, I go to Gen Con. I'm like, oh, how's the con? You go to Comic Con. So I pick him up and I'm like, oh, what kind of trade show is that? And he's like, well, it's not the cosplay thing. I'm like, oh my God, I go to Gen Con all the time. And he's like, oh, really? I've never gone to that. And so next thing you know, he's big into gaming. I'm big into gaming. He's doing cosplay stuff and everything. So we're talking pictures. And, you know, so it was kind of cool that, you know, it was something that, you know, but it was interesting because neither one of us would ever have thought of opening a conversation with, oh, yeah, I'm big into Dungeons and Dragons. It's just not the conversation, the icebreaker that I lead with.
No, it's definitely not an icebreaker.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I have to cut you off. Great.
Oh, no,
film, but
yeah, go ahead.
But you know, I have to say though, you know, D&D. It's funny because my friend had a joke where, you know, fantasy football is not that far from D&D.
Yeah.
And you can always start off a conversation with somebody with fantasy football and all their fantasy teams. But, yeah. You know, you can't really start out with something with, yeah, I went to, you know, this D&D game that, you know, I had, and I had my fantasy character go through and do all this different stuff,
yeah.
You know. But I do have to say, too, though, is it is becoming a little bit more mainstream now with a lot of these podcasts that we're doing, but also, you know, different things that are on YouTube. you know, with Geek and Sundry, where they talk about where they're doing stuff, where they're actually running, having games on their show, on their website, where there's somebody that's running a game. And it's starting to become more mainstream. And I think that has to all to do with, you know, World of Warcraft and some that kind of broke the mainstream.
And I just want to add on to that. It's kind of a funny but sad story. So I no longer live in Illinois. I'm actually in Maryland now. And last year, I think it was before Gen Con, I was wearing one of my Gen Con sweatshirts. And my wife and I were going to get something to eat. And it was in, I think it was like an IHOP restaurant. And so this couple came up to me and said, "Oh, do you go to Gen Con?" And so I'm thinking, how do they know I go to Gen Con? Not realize I'm wearing a Gen Con shirt. And they said, I said, "Yeah, I do." They said, "Oh, do you game?" I said, "Not right now, because I haven't found a group. I do a little bit online, because we were still doing the Pathfinder once a month." And they were like, "Yeah, we're trying to form a group, and we want to go to Gen Con too, but we haven't been able to go to it." And then their table's up, and so they walked off, and they were like, "It was nice to meet you." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And like a dummy, I never got their information. And I felt like this was my contact, because, like, I know no one out here. And so now I don't want to be like the creepy old guy who's hanging out in the comic book shop watching all the teenagers go by. It's just like, you know, it's but to Kirby's point, it is a little bit like, seems like it's more socially acceptable, because I was having a conversation last night with my wife, and she said, "Yeah, you nerds and geeks are in now. It's almost like a cool thing if you're that type of person." With shows like Big Bang Theory, you know, if you mention Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. or World of Warcraft, yeah. Everyone's at least heard of it. Oh, I know about that. So it is getting kind of trendy now.
Right. I'd say the only danger with that is I heard. I think it was maybe not this past season, but the season before with Game of Thrones, some people were complaining that it was becoming too fantasy. And it's like, well, this is my house, dude. You know what I mean? Like if you don't like it, watch NCIS.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like this is our, you know, like this has been pop. Like this is good. Like we like it because it's good. You're like coming to us now. You know, we're not changing for you. Two real quick stories about when I was 25, I think it was about 25, sitting at a bar, sitting next to this girl. She was married to like a friend of mine. I didn't really know her that well. And there's some movie on television, and the Hydra popped up, and she said something about like it being a dragon. I'm like, "Well, it's not a dragon, it's a Hydra." She's like, "Well, how do you know that?"
Nerd alert.
Yeah, I'm like, "Well, I played Dungeons and Dragons." She's like, "Oh my God, you're one of those guys." And she like was offended. She was like really mad about that. You know, so it was kind of weird, but she was kind of goofy anyway. So a few years ago, I think maybe 2 years ago, I ran into a grandmother of one of my daughter's friends from school, and she's from Indianapolis. So I was like, "Oh, I go to Indianapolis once a year." And she's like, "Oh, what do you go for?" And I'm like, "Oh, here it comes." You know, and I said, "I go for Gen Con." She's like, "Oh, really?" She's like, "We love Gen Con. Like, you guys are so great." She's like, "It looks like you guys have so much fun, and we never have any problems with you." She's like, "What is it exactly?" So I explained it to her and everything. But, no, it's kind of nice that, like, it wasn't, like, this eye roll, you know, this kind of, you know, like, office. She really appreciated us. And I think Indianapolis appreciates us, and we appreciate Indianapolis.
We most certainly do.
Well, the year that they had the Super Bowl there, Gen Con, non-racing event-wise, like they have the Indianapolis, you know, 500 and everything there that brings in huge, huge crowds. But as far as non-racing events, the year they had the Super Bowl was the number one biggest income-generating non-racing event in Indianapolis. Number two that year was Gen Con.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a huge – say, and Indianapolis is a phenomenal town to have Gen Con in, especially now it's grown to, what, 60,000 people are going to it now? So it's really becoming a much bigger show than it was in years past when we went. But
and
very cool.
On that note, I'm going to give everyone a couple of minutes for any final thoughts, anything you want to say, starting with you, Buck.
I just, you know, if anyone's listening to this, that's just you know, kind of getting their feet wet and interested in gaming, I would suggest doing it. Depending on your age bracket, it can be a little tough to find games. Like Ed said, you don't want to be the creepy guy at the comic book store. There's one three or four blocks from where I live, and I won't go there because I don't want to play games with 15-year-olds. But there's a bunch of sources. There's Roll20 and a couple other websites where you could find games and all kinds of online tools. But, you know, like it's not just... It seems like it's maybe a slight bit more than a hobby. It's kind of like... It kind of becomes part of you. Like, if you think about your characters kind of become part of you. It forces you to be creative. So there's a lot of good that comes out of this. And regardless, you might get an eye roll here and there, but who cares? Just move on.
Kirby?
I would have to agree with a lot of that. You know, it's if you're new to it, you know, you see what you can see. There's so much multimedia, you know, stuff you can look at now. Like I kind of touched on, there's this website, there's other things on YouTube. If you're interested in it, you know, try your local store, try to see if you can, you know, pick up a book and, you know, have fun with your friends. And as we've talked about, you know, as far as, you know, running the game, if you feel like you're one that would like to tell a story or be the one in charge, then, you know, that's right up your alley. And some of us, as me, I've benefited from that over the years. And as a player, I do have those stories that I reminisce with my friends who've been playing games with me. And we have those stories that we can always share. And those are memories that we get. It's a great experience. It was an absolute great place I could use my imagination and my drawing and my music and everything I'm a part of. It was just a creative outlet for me. And would I do it again? Absolutely. Did I have some prejudice with it? Absolutely. But it is starting to get more mainstream, as we talked about. And it's just, you know, I feel that maybe we, as in the people in this chat, have been playing this for over 20 years. We were kind of like people that actually started it for everyone that are now. And if you're a new player, then, you know, we were kind of like the fathers of this. If you're trying to, you know, kind of start your own game. And if you like, you know, kind of like learn from our experiences, you know, that would be great.
And last but not least, Graytone.
Hey, and I really echo what Buck and Kirby said. You know, I just want to add that there have been some people that have been challenging that I've tried playing with in the years, but the vast majority of people that I have met that are into role-playing games, things along those lines, very, very understanding, very, very accepting, especially the core group of guys that I've known a long time, great people. So new players come in that may be interested in it, you know, hey, we're willing to ask questions, you know, reach out through the boards on evolvingrpg.com that we can, you know, be glad to help out questions and stuff like that if you have it, you know, it's just you know, it's really, I think overall it's a very accepting community for people. You know, we're all pretending to be superheroes and wizards and knights and paladins and different things. And I'd encourage anybody who's interested in it, you know, if you're listening, you're an experienced player, hey, you know, we're kind of preaching to the choir there. But if you're a new player and you're listening to this, kind of get an idea of what this is, you know, hey, talk to your friends, get a group together. Great assets online that you can reach out to now to really bridge any, you know, borders around there. Great novels, and it, no matter what it is that you are interested in, you know, we talk a lot about Pathfinder, Dungeons & Dragons. There are a lot of other games out there. There are games based on Star Wars. There are games that are based on just space events, whether it be space tactical combat or space dramas and things like that. There's all kinds of things. You know, these modern games that are set in the variations of the modern world. There are games about superheroes. We touched a little bit on Marvel. No matter what the interest is, if there's a particular type of thing that you're interested in, there's a game that can meet that type of genre that you're looking for. You know, we talk a lot about Dungeons & Dragons and fantasy. If that isn't your thing, but you're still interested in games, there's tons of other options. So I'd encourage everyone to go to your local game shop, check it out, and, you know, look around online. There are great videos, there's great podcasts like this one, and you know, the group at Evolving RPG, you know, it's just really trying to support this community.
Thank you. So,
I just want to add one thing too. Tony was absolutely right. I mean, your local game shop most times will have events for D&D and, you know, role-playing games where they have Pathfinder Society, or they have D&D night, or they might have, you know, play D&D day, where they'll actually have, you know, a game that, you know, that will be there ready for you, that someone will run from the store, or sanctioned from the store, even sanctioned from, you know, whatever you know, company that is run, that is there that day, and that's where a lot of people you know, find these new RPG games too.
Okay. Absolutely, definitely good research resource to reach out to.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just start off by saying first, I thank you, the people listening to this podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've had a blast creating it. I would like to thank my panel. I would like to thank Buck, Kirby, and Greytone. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And a sort of a little preview is that we're going to have a very large panel discussion talking about the Paladins.
not them.
But
Paladin. Yeah,
thank
Paladins,
you, everyone.
Are great.
Oh, Paladin.
We're gonna save that discussion. Nope. Thank you, everyone, again, though. We really do appreciate you listening to the podcast, taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to it. And I want to thank the panel group again. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to create it. Keep listening to our podcast. Keep reviewing the sites. If you have any questions, drop us an email. And thank you all, and take care. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.